Hello, friends, and welcome again to Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Dean Welty with Rita Dunaway, and we are delighted to spend this time with you again today. As I said last week, John Sloop is with us in spirit, but his body is still on break in Europe with his wife, Gwen. However, we're delighted to welcome back a very special guest who was with us last week, well-known throughout the Valley and to many of you personally. His name is Brad Huddleston. And Brad, welcome back to Crossroads.
Dean and Rita, thank you. It is an honor. I know we've been friends for a long time, but it's fresh and new to me every time. So thank you for having me.
Well, you are most welcome. And I'll be saying more about Brad in just a minute. But again, to set the tone of our program, I'd like to draw on a verse, Brad, that you cited in a new book that you've just written. And it comes from 1 Corinthians 6:12. You can probably say it by memory. But it says, I quote, "All things are lawful for me, but all things are not helpful, and I will not be brought under the power of any." I love that resolve. Last week, we talked with Brad about a book that he wrote in 2006 entitled The Dark Side of Technology. We spent a lot of time talking about the addictive, progressive, and destructive nature of pornography. And if you missed it or would like to hear it again, you can pick it up online on our homepage at www.valleyfamilyforum.org. But today, we'll be talking about his new book entitled Digital Cocaine, A Journey Toward Eye Balance. I don't even know what eye balance is, but we'll find out. Once again, like our program last week, it's all about the good, the bad, and often the very ugly face of technology in our world today, and the many ways that it affects every one of us for better or for worse, and sometimes, as I said last week, as a matter of life and death. Well, now a little bit more about Brad. He loves to hear this part. As we noted again last week, Brad has traveled across America, around the world, speaking about the challenges and the dangers that that technology brings with it. The good news is, from Brad, that with God as his guide and with his wife Beth at his side, that rhymes, Brad has lifted countless numbers of people out of bondage to their screens and into the freedom of a new life with Jesus Christ. And that's what he's going to share with us today. Rita?
Yeah, what an amazing ministry you and Beth have, Brad. So we're going to move on and talk about this newer book, Digital Cocaine. But before we do, for listeners who missed it last week, I just want to pass on the top practical tip from last week's program, for me anyway, which was as simple as this: don't let the digital devices be in the bedrooms overnight. That's you right. know, it's practical. It's a simple action step. Not easy necessarily, but simple for parents to do.
Rita, I would add to that something that Brad said. It is the responsibility of a parent to be a
That's
parent.
Right.
Not just a friend.
Yeah. So talking about this newer book this week, I have to start out by saying we have the book sitting on our table here in the studio, and it has a very confrontational cover as well as a confrontational title, Digital Cocaine, A Journey Toward Eye Balance. Tell us a little bit about why you chose this art for the cover and how you came up with the title.
Well, during the writing process, I take my audiences through the published literature of neuroscience in relation to digital addiction. As my wife, Beth, was reading through the manuscripts first, and then it would go on to Brian Charette and then to Dean Welty, Beth came up with this idea of the cover. And so we turned that over to the graphic designers and so forth. But basically what you see is a 13-year-old boy, and he has a straw and an iPhone, and he is snorting a white substance off of his iPhone. And when you look closely, that white substance is zeros and ones. And the reason we call it digital cocaine is because when you look at the current neuroscience, we have these wonderful technologies in which you can look inside of the brain now. You know, we have MRIs, you lay down, you go in the tube. Well, we now have fMRIs, which are functional magnetic resonant imaging machines. You put the little suction cups on the head, and you can actually have people watch pornography. They put them in these tubes, and they make love. They put them in there, and they Google. And I know, it's crazy, but you can actually see now what is going on. Welcome to the world I've been living in the last few years. But when you look at the brain scans of people who are addicted to cocaine, and you look at the brain scans of people who are addicted to screens, their brain scans are identical. The same areas of anticipation, the same areas of addiction light up, and it all hinges on this neurotransmitter called dopamine. And so when you ingest cocaine, it goes up the nose, and cocaine being a stimulant, it gets into the bloodstream, it goes into the brain, it stimulates it, it releases large amounts of dopamine. Now, dopamine is not bad. You need it. The issue is how much are you getting? When you are looking at things, particularly things that are stimulating like pornography, video games, social media, where you're glued to it, it goes straight in through the eyes, goes straight into the occipital lobes, which are part of the brain. It stimulates the brain, and guess which neurotransmitter gets released in large amounts, large quantities? Dopamine. And so the hook in all addiction is this chemical called dopamine. So when you look at the various activities that people are doing, gaming, pornography, social media, it turns out it's extremely stimulating to the brain. And so these drips of dopamine keep hitting an area of the brain called the nucleus accumbens, or the pleasure center. It's part of the reward circuit. We get rewarded with pleasure. And the brain builds up tolerance to that, just like it would to cocaine, trying to fight back. And we don't like to be cut off from those feel-good feelings. And so what do? We do more of the activity. And in the case of drugs, you sometimes even have to switch to a harder drug to overcome that resistance that's built up so that you experience the same level of mania or high. And it turns out that when you look at the brain scans of people who get addicted to digital technologies, the same mechanism of addiction kicks in. And so all of this is new, and it's an emerging field, and so that's why we call it digital cocaine, because they're the same. One counselor and therapist set out to try to quantify, okay, we see these scans, it's true, and I'm reading a little bit between the lines, but here's the bottom line of what he was trying to do. He's trying to figure out how many hours of video game playing would you have to do to equal one line of cocaine and the high that it produces, the amount of dopamine that gets released. And he came up with a figure. 2 hours of playing a video game is the equivalent of snorting one line of cocaine in the high that it produces. That's how much dopamine gets released. So the worry is you have children now who are being given these devices that we all have, including myself, and they're using them as babysitters. Yeah. And the reason we know now why they work 100% of the time is because they're being mesmerized chemically. It's not, even if you give them education apps and games, their cognitive abilities are deteriorating. They're not being enhanced. And so it is very frightening. And listen, I love parents, okay? I say these things, but I temper it with hopefully a lot of love, because the scripture tells me to tell the truth, but do it in love. We did not know about this new technology from fMRIs until very recently. So what I'm saying to parents is, no parent that I know of set out to give brain damage to their children. No teacher in a school system or a school system who's giving out the tablets and one-to-one laptop and tablet programs, they didn't set out to do brain damage. Right. So I'm not mad at anyone. I'm not accusing anyone. The only thing I'm saying is we now know we've had a lot of unintended consequences with these devices, and it explains what we all see, and that is the head staying down all the time, the anger when you try to take the tablets and phones away from the children, and the craving that the kids have for it. So that's why it's called digital cocaine.
Well, I just have to point out what I love about this, and what I love that I'm hearing about this book, Digital Cocaine, is that this is not just Brad Huddleston on a soapbox.
No.
This is science. These are actual scientific findings and research, and you are using that to help parents to confront a very real problem that most of us are already aware of on some level.
Rita, I like to be liked, and Dean, I like to be liked, just like anybody else.
I like
else.
You very much.
I appreciate that, and I realize I have a counterculture message, and I'm not a glutton for punishment. I'm not doing this just to stir the pot. I'm doing it because I love Jesus, and Jesus loves his people, and he loves sinners and people who don't know God. And we have this thing that's clogging up the channels between us and him. He's not mad at us. He just misses us. So that's why I do it.
Well, Brad, just going back to this 2 hours for one line of cocaine equality, does it matter what you're watching during those 2 hours? I mean, there must be different levels of excitement.
Yeah, there are. I would say in the order of addiction, the activities that are most stimulating. Pornography is by far the number one. The current research is showing that not only do you have the literally the cocaine effect, but you also have the added, a polydrug effect, as though you have added heroin with it, which is an opiate. So people who watch pornography, they really get into a trance, as it were. So when you look at those brain scans, they're frightening because it's like you've mixed heroin. But then it would be video games and social media. They've scanned the brains of people who get addicted to social media. And let me say, I'm not against technology. I have a computer science degree, by the way. Okay, so it's not like I don't know about technology. I'm aware of it. I know what it is. I have a degree in nerddom. So I'm not here to debate technology. We all know it's here to stay. We know that the issue becomes eye balance. I gave it that term because there was no term. So I figure, you know, we're going to have to learn not to just manage it. We're going to have to actually stay away from cocaine. And that's what's shocking to a lot of people. There are just some things you're going to have to do without. That's just the way it is.
Well, Brad, you mentioned the more serious addictive programs that we should avoid. But there's also something, you make a strong case in your book that even multitasking is very dangerous on many levels. For example, you mentioned extreme brain stress. Yes. So what are we talking about here?
Let me tell you what I'm not talking about. A mother who has three children, for example, and these children are going around the house trying to burn the house down. And, you know, mom's doing what moms do best. You know, they're managing all of this and they're somehow able to answer the phone. They're able to take care of dad who's in the lounge chair, right? Yeah. And if dad had to manage all of this, the children would probably die, right? So that's analog multitasking. Remember the word analog?
Yes.
It means non-digital. The kind of multitasking that we're talking about here is digital multitasking, and that's where you have multiple screens and you have a phone and the phone is constantly vibrating and you have this intense desire to grab it quickly the moment it rings or a notification goes off. You're checking email and you've got multiple tabs open on your screen and you are jumping from one thing to the next. Then you answer the phone, the boss comes in. And so you have, and look, this is the world we live in now. This is the digital multitasking that the neuroscientists are screaming at us. They've made new findings. That's actually an artificial environment for the brain. Our grandparents used to unitask or monotask. So here's the issue. The brain, as it turns out, cannot multitask. You remember the days when job descriptions would say things like, in order to do this job proficiently, you must be a good multitasker? Well, that was a grand experiment gone horribly wrong. The productivity went through the floor. It turns out the brain is a sequential processor. And so what we end up doing is switching tasks very rapidly, which gives us the illusion that we can multitask, but it's very, very artificial for the brain. And so the brain releases all of these stress hormones, and dopamine gets released with a net result of a breakdown in the cognitive ability. So in school settings where they've implemented laptop and tablet programs, the children multitask, and it's even in curricula that we must, if we want our children to be successful later, we must teach our children to be, and our learners, our students, to be good multitaskers. So I find myself in schools all the time consulting because things haven't gone the way the marketing said that it would. And what do we do about that? So what's happened is I think the most shocking thing about the multitasking or the switch tasking, not only have we seen a decrease in grades and a cognitive breakdown, but it's releasing chemicals in the brain such that people are becoming clinically depressed. So I find myself counseling conferences where there are doctors and psychiatrists, and I'm not one of those yet. But what's happening is, because this is so new and not a lot of people know about it, a student will come in to the doctor, they're depressed, and they ask them a series of questions. How's your home life? You know, they want to poke a little bit to see if there's chaos in the home. Are they being abused and so forth? Well, if they pass all of those tests, why are you still depressed? I come along and say, well, check for the amount of time that they're on their devices, because we now know that if they're jumping back and forth, that it's not always, but it can be a cause for clinical depression in addition to anxiety disorders such as FOMO, which is an acronym that stands for a fear of missing out, and nomophobia, which is an anxiety when you go without your phone, which could include your battery going flat and you can't get to the charger, you get out of cell coverage and you have anxiety because as Dr. Walt Mueller, who is, by the way, presented at your church, I went to hear him, he says, and he's correct when he says, these phones have become an extension of who these children are. And so you have anxiety when you go without it.
Well, Brad, you mentioned being at our church. Let's just take a break here and tell us again who you are and how people can get in touch with you to come speak to their churches.
I'd be honored to. I am Brad Huddleston, and I have become an author over the last several years.
Prolific author.
Thank you. I'm not even sure what that word means. I'm very honored, Dean, and we have produced some DVDs also to surround these and to undergird them. But I travel all over the world, and I spend a lot of time based in Australia and in South Africa, and then go to other places as well. And my website is bradhuddleston.com. I'm from here in the Shenandoah Valley, and this is home, and this is where we live, and we want to invest in our community here. And that's
so
why I'm here with you.
They can contact
bradhuddleston.com.
you through that website. Well, again, now let's get back now to what we're talking about, this digital cocaine. You write about, and this gets really troubling and serious, you write about self-harm. Mm-hmm. What is that, and is it also connected with this digital cocaine?
Yeah, self-harm, I have been sounding the alarm now for a couple of years. In the last, I would say, 3.5 years, I've watched self-harm go epidemic. Now, we've always had self-harm. Self-harm manifests itself in a number of ways, predominantly cutting, but also burning, also picking at wounds, not allowing them to heal, also breaking of bones on purpose, banging of the head, and it's epidemic. I was recently featured on a show in Africa, sort of like 60 Minutes, and they followed me around for a couple of days with cameras, and I was so thrilled when I noticed one day that they had the cameras out on the audience, because this is something that I do all over the world in front of thousands of kids.
They were riveted.
Well, I will ask this question. I will say to these children, how many of you, and I'm not speaking about them because I wouldn't embarrass them, but how many of you know someone else who cuts themselves? And we get 50 to 70% of the hands around the world go up. And it has gone epidemic. And there's not hardly a week goes by, Rita and Dean, that children don't come up to me and it breaks your heart. They'll pull their sleeves up and their pants legs, and you'll just see mangled arms and legs, and they'll cut their thighs, their stomachs, and buttocks, and anywhere. They hide it a lot too. But why do they do it? The top three reasons that they do it. Number one, divorce and chaos in the home, fighting and arguing. So that messes with the chemicals in their brain and they feel out of control. Mm-hmm. Secondly is abuse of various sorts, sexual, verbal, those types of abuse, which is epidemic with children these days because of the breakup of the family. Mm-hmm. Thirdly, there's a digital component. We talked about how the dopamine barrier forms, and we crave this dopamine, and that wall of resistance builds up trying to push out this excessive amount of dopamine. Well, eventually, what happens is that resistance gets so high that a child ends up in a state called anhedonia, or an anhedonic state, which means they've numbed their feelings. So if you ask a child who cuts, why do you do it? They will correctly and accurately tell you something like this: I do it because it makes me feel. I do it because it makes me feel peaceful. And that's a key to tell you what's happening physiologically. Whenever we injure ourselves, the brain helps us to cope with that injury by releasing endorphins. Mm-hmm. And if you work out and exercise regularly, you know exactly how that feels. It's good. Now, exercise is great because not only are you releasing endorphins that relieve stress, but you're also burning up bad hormones, mm-hmm. stress hormones that get released. But with cutting, it's just one way. So here's the problem. Those endorphins are also addictive. And so over time, they'll cut, they'll get that peaceful feeling, and then a resistance wall builds up. And so in order to keep feeling peaceful, they have to keep cutting.
It is progressive, just like pornography.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it goes from the skin to the tissue and some even to the bone. You have to get more extreme to keep releasing these large quantities. So I'm sounding the alarm. Now, spiritually, for those who are spiritual, I'll tell you what I do. As you know, I'm also a minister. I have a Bible degree, and I'm an evangelist. What I tell these children, teenagers and their parents, is that I would like to introduce them to true peace. And his name is Jesus. He's the Prince of Peace. And he won't cut you. No cutting required. No harm required. Love is required. And so I use it as an opportunity to share the love of God with them.
It's the gospel. That's great. I want to get back to talking about schools. Mm-hmm. You brought up schools a few minutes ago.
Here's
and of course, I have two school-aged children, yeah. So I'm very interested and, you know, have long been fascinated by what's happening in the schools. I know that you often speak at education conferences around the world, actually, which is, it's amazing that we get to have you here in the Valley, because I know you're all over the world. But in your book, you say that grades often go down where technology has been introduced in schools. What I see is it seems like everywhere there's this big movement toward more technology in all schools. We hear about the Chromebooks, we hear about iPads being issued, you know, all this use of technology. So tell us about that, because it seems like the culture is saying more technology in school is good, it's going to help our students succeed. But now listening to you, that is all really in doubt for me. What would you say about that?
The BBC just came out with an article, I think yesterday, another article about how the grades are going down. And there are a lot of schools around the country. I just encountered one where we live down in Augusta County that quietly put the tablets away. So it is a phenomenon that's happening. But here's what's going on. We talked about multitasking a minute ago. Because of this switch tasking in the brain, we now have a situation where a child will sit down to do their math, and it only takes, and now on average research shows, 2 minutes before they're interrupted. Mm-hmm. 2 minutes. And then they're off to social media. Now, what they're doing, they're overcoming the boredom of the math with dopamine, with social a visit to their game or social media. So they get their hit of dopamine, and then they come back to math. Well, what you have done is interrupted a very natural process in which the hippocampus, which is your short-term memory, it needs time to focus.
Yeah.
And it has to be in a quiet environment for an extended period of time for it to properly fill up and then transfer into long-term memory in what is known as a schema. So when you interrupt that every 2 minutes, you never allow it to fill up properly. And Nicholas Carr is a guy who writes about this as well. And he's written a book called The Shallows, and why the information never goes deep in the brain where we can recall it and have long-term memory, like our multiplication tables. I often ask older people, 6 times 8, and they'll scream out 48. And you do that with kids, and they can't do it. So what's happened is, we've tampered with the natural flow of memory by multitasking instead of unitasking. So in its most simplistic form, by handing out the tablets as one-to-one, the principals and the teachers will go off to these iPad conferences and tablet conferences and get jacked up on dopamine themselves by looking at all these apps. The principals come back and they demand, and I see this everywhere I go, you must use this so many hours a week and this and this. And on the surface, they are fascinating, and it is miraculous looking. I'll grant you that. It really, and I have a computer science degree, so I do actually get that. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, there's this pesky little thing called the truth. It's not working. And so I look at why is it not working, and I use science to find out instead of my opinions. Truth is, grades are going down because of multitasking. So this transference of memory, it's causing memory problems. It's causing digital dementia, which is another thing that I discovered by being in South Korea, which is the most wired nation on this planet. They have 200 digital detox rehabilitation centers set up across South Korea, and China has 300, because they've had the technology introduced longer than us at the levels. Now, we invented it, but they've introduced it and used it sooner. So now they've manifested the problem sooner. So in the academic world, there are a lot of problems under the surface, and I have found tremendous favor, not in the early implementation. They looked at somebody like me and thought, no way are we having him here, but it didn't take long before they're saying, uh-oh, what are we going to do? This is not working out the way that we thought. So that's where I've been, and speaking at the education conferences. I've been warmly welcomed around the world and across this country as well to help try to bring some balance back into that world as well.
Brad, didn't you even give the example of a high-tech CEO who doesn't allow his children to be?
I heard that. Yeah,
yeah, this is document. I mean, this is not an internet rumor. Steve Jobs never allowed his children to use the gadgets that he invented, and the majority of the tech employees and people in Silicon Valley, where a lot of this is invented, they send their children to Waldorf Steiner schools. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. I've spoken in one. These are tech-free schools. And so what they do, it's sort of like Montessori and some of the classical schools, where they create the same culture at home as they do at school. So between the ages of 0 and 12, mm-hmm. They allow no technology at the school, and they strongly create that or encourage the same climate at home where they have no technology. So why is it that the tech folks send their kids there? Yeah. It's because there's a brain reason. The creative side of the brain is in development between 0 and 12, and it turns out these screens are killing it. And it manifests itself with a lack of common sense, things like that. So they can't think properly. They're not creative. So they let the brain pass through those stages of proper development, and then they gradually introduce technology. So a lot of the tech executive kids are smarter than the rest, not because all of them didn't have the opportunity to have a high, a good education and all that. It's just because they let the brain develop in an analog world. So Steve Jobs, and also I should also mention that Bill Gates only allowed his daughter 45 minutes a day. That's it. So they kept him well within the limits that the brain can handle.
Brad, we only have a couple of minutes left, and I know cyberbullying and bullying is a part of this, but you may want to say a word about that. But I think Rita wants to get on to solutions. What do we do?
Yeah, exactly. So can the brain recover from digital addiction? And what I'm most interested in hearing you address is, what is the proper place for technology in our lives? And for me, I'm thinking, especially for my kids, what is the proper place of technology in their lives?
Well, I talk about eye balance, and I gave it that name. After all of my research, I've pared it down to this. Picture a scale, and you got the two pans, you got the fulcrum, and when those are at equal level, people tend to think of that as balance. Correctly so. Not so with brain balance. Right now, if you were to put digital in one of those pans and analog in the other, we would be weighted heavily, about 80% in a day's time digital, with 20% analog. We need to reverse that. So I didn't say throw it away, but it needs to fade into the background, and it's sort of like money. Money can be a great servant, but it's a terrible master. Yes. So you put technology with that same principle in there, and you will achieve eye balance. And as Christians, we should certainly stay away from sin like porn, things like that, and video games. We know that it's harming our temple, so use that as a guide. God says to take care of your temple.
Brad, I think we're going to have to wrap this up, but I think it's probably the most important question. You talk about this as a moral and a spiritual crisis, and this really goes back to Rita's question, what can we do? How can you expand on that?
The intimacies that God has designed for us to have toward Him has been stolen with screens, and I'm not anti-technology. That intense desire, And if I'm hearing God and writing these books, this would be the bottom line. Thank you for asking. This is why I do what I do. If anybody has Facebook and see those little three dots at the top and you can't wait, you know that now is a dopamine drip. You've seen your children beg and crave the game controller, and for hours they will sit there with a tablet or with a game controller. If I'm hearing the Lord in this project, is simply this. He's saying, I wish my people felt that way about me. And that's why we're in church, we're in youth group. I'm not mad at anyone. God's not mad. He just misses us. And so we are transfixed chemically, nearly spiritually. And God is saying, I wish you wanted to stare at my face all the time like you do a screen. And instead of praying without ceasing, you're screening without ceasing. I'd love for you to be connected with me constantly, staring into my face. So that is really, and what I've done is use science to show you why we're transfixed, but it's a spiritual problem, and God loves us.
Well, before Dean closes the program, please just tell us one more time how our listeners can get a copy of both books, the first book, The Dark Side of Technology, and this new book, Digital Cocaine, A Journey Toward Eye Balance.
Yeah, thank you for that. BradHuddleston.com. BradHuddleston.com. All the information about the books are there. And we'd love to have folks come out to our annual banquet. We have it on April the 2nd. It's going to be at First Assembly of God in Harrisonburg. It's free from 6 to 9. And you can register free of charge at BradHuddleston.com. And thank you so much.
Well, our guest has been Brad Huddleston, a powerful voice for the responsible use of technology, but also with a very clear warning about the dangers it holds for those who abuse it with pornography, excessive gaming, addictive messaging, and irresponsible social flirtations and intimacies. Brad, thank you so much for your time. As always, we deeply appreciate you, our listeners, your prayers, your encouragement, and your financial support. If you would like to make a tax-deductible donation to Crossroads, you can do so by check to Box 881, Harrisonburg, 22.
800-273-8103. I'm Dean Welty with Rita Dunaway. Thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to being with you again next week, same time, same station, at the crossroads where faith and culture meet.
Rejoice, rejoice, rejoice.